Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a Friday. We are loaded today. Everybody from Greg Cosell to Charlotte Flair. We got a lot of flair today. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Joy and I Match. Didn't mean to. It is great to have you on a Friday. We had a NFL game last night. The team so bad in Philadelphia that both Cam Newton and Mac Jones looked amazing. Both.
Philadelphia is an interesting organization these days. Thought there were some learns last night, though.
Yeah. You know, when you're a quarterback in this league, you want to put pressure on the quarterback, force him into mistakes. Philadelphia doesn't do that. So, Mac Jones had a 17-play scoring drive. Cam Newton was 8 for 9. The only incompletion was a drop pass. Philadelphia's starters aren't good, their backups aren't very good, and their third and fourth string guys, many are not professional football players. Hard to figure out what you watched last night. When you take New England's coaching and coordinating and you combine it with backups and third and fourth stringers for Philadelphia, Mac looked great and Cam looked great. Mac Jones was Pro Football Focus's highest graded player last night, but he was playing against guys. A lot of these guys are not going to be on Philadelphia's roster, and if you can't make Philadelphia's roster, perhaps you're not going to make any roster. So we all know that Mac Jones is eventually going to be the Patriots quarterback. He plays with a lot of poise for a young guy. Could it be soon? Here's my takeaway. Number one is the Patriot coaches are not unveiling Cam Newton the runner yet. That will add to this offense. It's a bonus that Mac Jones does not provide. Number two, Cam Newton's a power player. I mean, he really is. This is a power roster. It is not a speed roster. It's not a pretty roster. It's not a finesse roster. Cam matches the roster. Number three is Cam Newton is getting all the first team reps at practice. So, you know what? My takeaway last night is New England's going to be very boring. They don't have playmakers. But they may be 11-6 and boring, because it's the best offensive line potentially they have had in years, especially if Isaiah Wynn can stay healthy. They've got four legitimate running backs. The defense is always solid. The head coach and the offensive coordinator are probably the best at their position in the game. And you know Cam Newton or Mac Jones is going to probably, especially Cam, go 2-0 against the Jets. Never forget this, is that the dynasties for New England, the early and the late dynasties, looked a lot like this team. Let's go to the first dynasty. The receivers were David Givens, Deion Branch, Troy Brown. No elite receivers. The running back was Antoine Smith, who over several years averaged about 800 yards a game. The defenses were stingy. Brady made no mistakes. And they won a bunch of Super Bowls. And the last dynasty before Brady left, let's go back and look at that one. It was Edelman and old Gronk. Brady didn't make a lot of mistakes. The defense was stingy. And like the early Patriot dynasty, the running backs, three different leading rushers in three different Super Bowl wins. When New England had the playmakers, Randy Moss, Aaron Hernandez, Wes Welker was the best slot receiver in the league and winning Super Bowls. Those weren't the Super Bowl years. They were good. They broke some records. They were more fun to watch. This roster is a lot like the early and late Super Bowl rosters. I don't even think it matters. I'm dead serious here. I don't think it matters. I think Mac Jones or Cam could both win 10 or 11 games. Now, I think Buffalo is head and shoulders better than both teams right now. Both, you know, Josh Allen's better than Cam and Mac. I think the roster's better. I think Miami and New England's rosters are fairly even, with Miami having more perimeter speed and playmakers. But go look at the schedule right now. I looked at the schedule for New England this morning. Here's four guaranteed wins just on coaching and defense. Jets twice, Jacksonville, and Houston. That's four wins. Here's three feel-like wins. New Orleans, Carolina, and Atlanta, all rebuilding. And then here's two that could go either way, but they get both of them at home, Dallas and Tennessee. 4 + 3 + 2 = 9. And the over-under in Vegas is 9. And by the way, last year, New England had the most opt-outs in the NFL. They're all back. They had no preseason for Cam, who got signed late, and then Cam got COVID. So the quarterback situation this year, even though it's Cam, it's better. You have a much better Cam. You have Mac Jones. So I look it up and down at this roster, and there's this big argument who should start. I think the coaches for New England got it right. I think Cam's going to offer a little playmaking. Matt can't. Cam's taking the first reps with the first team. And I think Cam, they haven't unleashed his running yet. Cam's a power player. This is a power team. But, you know, I sat and watched the first 2 weeks of the Patriots, and I'm like, this is a lot like their first dynasty and their second dynasty. Now, the AFC is much better today, and they shouldn't be favored, and Kansas City's better, and Buffalo's absolutely better. But after that, they're in the class with the Chargers, Baltimore, Cleveland. I mean, they're coaching, their defense, their offensive line. I don't think it matters who starts. I think this is a 10-win team. And I think if they get some breaks and Mac keeps growing and Cam stays healthy, maybe 11. So it's interesting on the Cowboys. So whenever I'm trying to decipher a story, the most obvious thing to do, you would do it, you try to find people close to an organization or a business who have good sourcing, and what are they saying? So Gil Brandt used to work for the Cowboys, still very connected to the Cowboys. I think he lives in Texas. Came out with a tweet. He said, had a long talk with Dak Prescott yesterday out in Frisco, Texas. He said, I expect him to be out there, but I'm not sure he's going to be 100%. The season tilts on his health. That's what Gil Brandt said. And by the way, remember, Mike McCarthy, 3 weeks ago, Dak's playing in the preseason. Then he had a second MRI, and Mike McCarthy said Dak's out for the preseason. Michael Irvin, very connected, lives in Texas, still close to the Cowboys, said this about Dak in a recent podcast.
I'm watching on TV when I was there at camp, and he was throwing the ball back to the guy that was snapping it to him with his left hand. Wouldn't even raise the right hand and throw the ball 2 yards. I was like, oh, no. You don't stay out this long with something this minor at that position when you had all of last year off.
But wait. There's more. Troy Aikman on an early broadcast, Hall of Fame broadcast, I think it was. Troy Aikman, very close to the Cowboys, lives in Texas, said this.
Yeah, the Cowboys are downplaying it, but I think when your franchise quarterback's missing the amount of time that he's missing, I tend to think it's probably a little bit more significant than what they have let on. And, you know, big year for a lot of people.
Dallas, remember, is very Dak dependent. Because they don't do a lot of other things well. Their head coach, their defense, their backup quarterback situation, You watched New England last night. They're not as quarterback dependent. A, they have a better coach. B, a much better defense. C, they could start either of those guys. They're not dependent on Cam or Mac Jones. They could each play. The worse your team is, the more dependent you are on the guy that touches the ball 60 times a game. I mean, never forget, Dak was on pace last year in the four games he played, started and finished, to throw for 6,700 yards, shatter every NFL record, and they were still 1-3. And the one win was that ridiculous fluke win against Atlanta. Like, Dallas needs to get on the phone. It's called Nick Foles in Chicago, Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville. I mean, I'd go Mason Rudolph in Pittsburgh because it looks like Dwayne Haskins may win the backup job there. This is a very Dak-dependent team, and I hear this all the time. Everybody's quarterback-dependent. You watched New England last night. They're not. That is a coaching, running game, O-line, defensive story. One quarterback past his prime, the other not near his prime. They could win 10 games. They won 7 last year. Now we've added an NFL game, and they're a better roster. So, you know, remember, this is a baseball injury to Dak. It's a shoulder injury, right? That's why the Cowboys contacted the Texas Rangers and the New York Yankees. And pitchers who get this injury, they put them on the shelf. They don't pitch. So add this in. Zeke has been on the decline for 3 years. Defense, new coordinator, new system, lot of young draft picks. They need to make an impact. This thing could blow up. They better get on the phone. Because this is not a good enough football team to go to a backup quarterback and win 5 games. Washington's better. The Giants should be better. Get on that. Jerry's got a 350-foot yacht. He's got to get on that small little iPhone right now and call the Chicago Bears or the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So I'm going to say something that you know it, I know it, and everybody that watches football knows it. Where you land as a rookie quarterback is about 80% of it. It's about 80% of it. Where do you land? Your GM, your ownership, your O-line, your coach, expectations. Mac Jones is going to win more games than Zach Wilson. And I think Zach Wilson's more talented. Think of these 8 things that Mac Wilson has. He's got a great offensive line. How many kids? Dak got that. He won 13 games as a rookie. Dak inherited that. A very successful coordinator. Yeah, kind of matters. A Super Bowl winning coordinator. Been in a lot of big games. A legendary head coach. A great defense. It's Belichick. They're always top 10, top 5. A very strong running game. No chaos in the front office. He doesn't have to start. And he didn't have to carry the offense. They're not going to put him in positions to play above or beyond himself. I looked up this morning. Zach Wilson of the Jets has none of those. He needs to start now. First-time play caller, rookie head coach, worst roster in his division, shaky O-line. His left tackle came in at 370, about 25 pounds overweight. That's what the Jets are acknowledging. He's got none of those. Mac Jones is going to win more NFL games than Zach Wilson, certainly early, barring an injury. And you put Mac Jones in Chicago, it's an entirely different outcome. They don't have an offensive line, coach in the hot seat. I don't trust their front office. They have like one playmaker, and if Allen Robinson got hurt, Justin, make plays for us. So there's maybe 1 to 2 quarterbacks a decade that can overcome dysfunction and win. Andrew Luck. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Andrew Luck. And he was forced into early retirement. Mac Jones has really hit on what they call pocket aces. He got the best college football coach of all time. And his coordinator, Steve Sarkisian, won the award for best coordinator in college football. 130 teams. He goes to the NFL and he gets the best coach in the NFL's history. And if they gave out an award, Josh McDaniels would be on a short list to be the best coordinator at both Bama and in New England. Excellent running game, tremendous offensive line and protection. Both have great defenses. They don't ask you to play above and beyond yourself. They've been in big games. They know what it's like. This is as well as you can do. Again, you put Mac Jones in a lot of different spaces. Jacksonville could be a disaster. Chicago. But I'm looking around this last night, and I'm like, he had a 17-play drive. Now it's Philadelphia's 4 stringers. But we all know this. Like, this is not a debate. This is one of the few things you and I can always agree on. Where you land. It's a lot like life. You know, the difference is in the NFL, for a rookie quarterback, they're going to give you about 1.5 to 2 years to prove you can do it. So if you inherit garbage, your career is mostly garbage. For the rest of us, you're born into a family. If things aren't great, yeah, I got 70 years to figure it out. But I watch Mac Jones and I'm like, this is perfect. I mean, this is, could you have given a kid a better landing spot than Mac Jones? It almost, in a weird way, his limitations athletically are perfect. Like he knows, this is what I can't do, this is what I can, and he's smart enough to see what New England provides. It's just put it in automatic. You don't even have to shift gears. Just an automatic. Just drive. When you start, just drive this puppy, because the road is just totally grooved for him right now.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask?
Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Houshmandzadeh and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
They did an NBA offseason survey. Now, ESPN only surveyed 10 scouts and executives. That feels like a bizarrely low number. I don't know. But it's a number. It's execs. You'd like to get into the 30, 40, 50 number, but it's 10 execs and scouts. And they polled them on a bunch of stuff anonymously. Best offseason, worst offseason, best trade, worst trade, best player. So there were 10 votes, and LeBron James got zero votes for the NBA's best player. Giannis got five, and KD got five. And now, you can make the argument. LeBron is not the best scorer. He's certainly not the best shooter. He's no longer the best defender. But he did win MVP of the finals 10 months ago. I would argue, you could easily say he's still the best player. Because everybody else has a hole. Giannis can't shoot. Kawhi can't stay healthy. Harden and Steph are liabilities on the defensive end. KD's the closest thing to LeBron, but he's a little brittle. So Tom Brady's never had the best arm. Tom Brady's never been the best athlete. He's never been the strongest guy or the quickest guy. You could argue with Peyton Manning, probably wasn't even the smartest guy. But if you had one drive in football, fourth quarter, who would you take? I'd take Brady. If you gave me 7 minutes, Game 7, fourth quarter, in the entire league, I'd take LeBron. Does that make him the best player? It makes him the best player with 7 minutes to go in the season in Game 7. So I've said this forever. LeBron does everything pretty well. He's a good shooter. Not great. He's a really good scorer. He can be a really good rebounder. He's still, at times, a really good defender. He's a really good leader. He's a great ball handler. He's an amazing passer. He's an A or a B plus at virtually everything. You can't marginalize him. He can go left. He can go right. He can go mid-range. He scores at the rim. He can shoot a three. You can marginalize everybody else, or like Kawhi, they're not really distributors or leaders, and they're quiet. So he's got a little bit of a leadership hole. KD's the only thing close to me. In terms of just, okay, get a bucket. But I feel like LeBron, if I needed a stop, would probably get it before KD. And I've said this about LeBron. He has been, for the last 15 years, the NBA's Swiss Army knife. The knife isn't quite as sharp as it was about 6 years ago. And I would argue this. If I need a basket, just a basket, I'd take KD. If I need just a stop, I would go Giannis or a healthy Kawhi. But if I needed 7 minutes of brilliant basketball, leadership, distribution, ball handling, passing, defense, could hit a three, could score at the rim, could hit mid-range, I'd take LeBron. And I would take Tom Brady one drive. I wouldn't take Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers' history is he's not great on the final drive. Russell Wilson is, but I don't think he's all in, has the experience in big games like Tom Brady. So, you know, it's best player is we know it's a very tiny, tiny group, but you start looking around, and I think one of the things of Brady and LeBron, it's hard to marginalize them. They're like A or B plus at everything. You don't have to be great at everything. I say this about the NFL. You just can't be terrible at anything because the coaching's too good. Like the New York Giants are really bad on the offensive line. That will completely unravel their season. Carolina has a bad offensive line. They can only be so good. The NFL coaching's too good. You can't be terrible at anything. New England this morning is not terrible at anything. I'm not sure they're great outside of coaching at anything. But B-plus wins a lot of games. And B-plus also wins a lot of championships.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Cities go in cycles. with sports, good or bad. Tampa got in a hot streak. The Bucs won the Super Bowl, the Lightning won the Stanley Cup, and the Rays were in the World Series.
Yep.
Year before, Dodgers in L.A., and the Lakers won. Milwaukee, by the way, the Bucs just won. The Packers are excellent, and the Brewers are a great 9-1. If you can bet in this country, if you're in a state where you can bet, bet the Brewers to win the World Series. Dominant ace, great closer. They went on pitching. Yelich isn't having a great year, but they're a great 9-1 bet. When you they win with pitching, and we've seen in postseasons, pitching, good pitching is going to beat good hitting. So, and then there's the opposite. Thank God for Detroit, where everybody's circling the drain. Philadelphia, I'm watching the Eagles last night. The Flyers are a nothing burger. The Phillies are on a bad skid. The Eagles are a mess. Sixers have talent, but they're highly combustible. They can't figure out the Ben Simmons move. You know, the Eagles right now, I cannot remember a franchise that I for years respected, and then overnight they've become an eye roll. The way they treated Doug Peterson, the Carson Wentz mess, the meddling stories, how they've handled Jalen Hurts so far is weird. They're just, this is a passionate sports city, little bit of a mess. And, you know, again, the good news is, you know, they're in a division which is, you don't exactly have, you know, the 85 Chicago Bears in it. This is a fairly limited division. The Cowboys defense, the Giants O-line, you know, Washington's quarterback situation. You know, you could hang around in this thing till Thanksgiving if you were not a very good football team. They're just bad. Like Philadelphia, the Eagles right now are just a bad team. I always say that there are four components to be a Super Bowl bubble team: owner, GM, head coach, quarterback. If you're an A or a B plus in all of them, you're in the Super Bowl bubble. I used to think Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman were both in it. I'm not sure now. And boy, head coach and quarterback, it's near the bottom of the NFL. It is tough sledding right now for Philadelphia.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
On this show, we only bring the best on. No fringe people, only champions on this show. And this weekend, it's a SummerSlam. It is a massive event. John Cena, Roman Reigns is one of the headlining events. And we can pick who we want to bring on the show. And I said, the queen is the only person I want on the show. The great Charlotte Flair, an 11-time WWE Women's Champ. She is joining us now live. 4-0 in SummerSlam matches. By the way, you do not age. You're in better shape today than the last time I saw you. Give the audience some perspective. You know, we all know you're the daughter of Ric Flair. Your workout ethos, your workouts are legendary. In the average month, how many planes are you on, and how many hours a week do you work out? Let people know how hard you work.
An hour and a half a day, at least. It's like my one time to decompress, to turn everything off, to kind of forget the outside noise. So I'd say an hour and a half a day, minimum 30 minutes. But I just have to move. I just have to sweat.
So you are fighting in a triple threat match with Nikki A.S.H. and Rhea Ripley. And you have what they want. And, you know, it's almost like LeBron James. I'm the best player. You all want it. Do you feel pressure? Do you love it? Do you love annoying them? Take me inside what it means to be you in matches like this weekend.
Well, I think that's how I came up with the name, The Opportunity. Whether I have the title, whether I don't, I'm giving the women an opportunity to beat me. If you beat me, it's like, that's what makes you a champion. Nikki A.S.H. has the Raw Women's Championship, but if she beats me tomorrow, it's like, that's even bigger, but now it's a triple threat match. It's just giving them the opportunity to be in the ring with me. They have to rise to the occasion.
Yeah. Some people don't like to be a villain. There are times I think you love just getting in people's head. Am I right on that?
I do. It's just, if you can get people to react, whether it's good or bad, and get under their skin and go with it, I enjoy it. I enjoy getting that reaction out of people. And the more you dislike me, the more you like whoever I'm facing. And that's what it's all about, good versus evil.
So Cena takes on Roman Reigns. Now, Cena is, my takeaway is he's legendarily nice guy. He has messages. He's very positive, very optimistic, the good guy. Roman Reigns, not always the good guy, can be a little bit of a heel. So do you find yourself ever rooting for certain people in big matches?
I think this match is, it's bigger than just Cena versus Roman. It's just these two massive superstars and what they mean to our industry. I mean, when I first started, I always said I wanted to be the Cena of the company because no one works as hard as John Cena. I mean, he has a work ethic second to none. And then you have Roman, the new face of the company. I mean, he's been the face for a while, but he has come into his own. He's a new character. You're seeing all these layers. He's saying, yes, there are levels to this, but I don't necessarily find myself either rooting for Roman or Cena. I'm just, it's the spectacle of it. It's like SummerSlam has turned into another mini WrestleMania, and seeing just these two superstars and Cena has transcended WWE and Roman, just go at it. I'm just here for the ride. It's not even who I'm pulling for. It's just take me on that roller coaster. I'm so excited for them.
Did you know that Cena was a star instantly? The first time you saw him wrestle, did you know it instantly?
I don't necessarily remember the first time that I saw him wrestle or noticed that he was a star. But when you see him speak on WWE television, you can't deny his love and passion and respect for this industry and what the fans mean to him. Like, you can't fake that. Like, when he talks, you believe every word he's saying. So that's, to me, what drew me to him and was like, wow, like, he oozes what he's saying. Like, yes, like, Roman oozes confidence, but when Cena is talking, you eat every word up.
So I have somebody in my life that loves Sasha Banks. She faces Bianca Belair. Again, big personalities. Take me to what you think we'll see tomorrow night.
So for Bianca and Sasha, Bianca, to me, she's newer to the game, instantly had the it factor. That's what's making her so special. Sasha is one of my oldest rivals. We go way back, one of the four horsewomen. She already is. She is the boss. And she has that just natural swag. But tonight, SmackDown is in Phoenix. And seeing them face-to-face after facing each other at WrestleMania this year and being back against each other tomorrow night on SummerSlam, again, I don't know who I'm rooting for. They're both just ooze that confidence. But Bianca will have a lot to prove to beat the boss again.
Do you think you intimidate other women in the ring?
I think I intimidate men and women. Let's be honest.
Yes, completely. So, by the way, in your personal life, you seem to be happy as well. Your professional life is flying. It's a good time for you, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I've done a lot in my career. I mean, I've been able to main event pay-per-views, Raw, SmackDown, main event WrestleMania. But I really feel right now I am so, like, zoned in and in the best shape I've ever been in. My promos are just getting better. The character, like, I am in my prime right now. Like, I can't wait to see what my future holds because I didn't come this far to come this far. And one, I'm looking forward to stealing the show tomorrow night. There's only one queen in WWE.
What's one of your favorite SmackDown moments? If I said, Charlotte, a moment that you still think about from time to time, what is it?
So it's a sad moment, but a good moment. So when my dad was sick a couple years ago, SmackDown just so happened to be in Charlotte, North Carolina, right after my dad was released from the hospital. And I didn't know my dad was at SmackDown that night. And obviously we all thought we were going to lose him. And somehow he had this miraculous recovery. But I wrestled Natalya for the SmackDown Women's Championship in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I won. And when I won, my hometown was chanting, "You deserve it." But not that wasn't even the best part. When I got out of the ring and was walking to Gorilla, they had my dad come out of Gorilla, and I just ran. I'm going to get emotional. I just ran to him and hugged him because the whole time he was in the hospital, I was just like, am I never going to see my dad? Is he never going to see me wrestle again? Like, yes, I do it for the fans, but there's nothing like having your parent, you know, be there to watch you. So seeing him come out after everything, like, that's my top SmackDown moment. Was, yeah, yes, that moment's just about me, but you couldn't fake anything that was happening there and winning the title. It was just like light, just a perfect, you can't write these kind of things.
Yeah. Congratulations. You can cry on our show. You can get very emotional.
No, never.
I've cried on my show.
I spend all this time on this makeup, Colin. You know how long this takes?
Hey, great seeing you, Charlotte. The Queen. It's SummerSlam. It's Vegas. You look fantastic. Rooting for you. I'm heading there after the show today. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Colin.